Well, my name is Terry Causey, and I was born in a little suburb of L.A. I was probably up near Flint Ridge is where I went to high school. But I spent a lot of time on Balboa Island, and that is where I learned to sail.
How old were you when you started to sail? When did you first set foot on a sailboat?
The first, when I was 5 years old, was when I learned how to handle dinghies. Mm-hmm. And then later, we had a small boat called a kite. It was about 14 feet with an 18-foot mast. It was a cat rig, so it just had the mast in the very bow. And I would sail it all over the bay, back and forth. We would tip it and race and up and down. And
you were 5 years old, so somebody obviously was teaching you.
When I started to sail, I was older. So I was more like 13, 14.
Who brought you on the boat when you were five?
My dad.
Was he a sailor?
No. He liked to fish. He introduced me to fishing. And when I first started fishing, I'd fish off the pier, the public pier. And then later on, we'd go out in this little boat. And then it just, we just moved on from there.
So what made you decide to learn how to sail?
I didn't really get into serious sailing until I moved to Hawaii. And it was the first time I was someplace that was so much water around, ocean around me, that I didn't have access to a boat. And there was an ad in the paper by Nancy Griffith advertising celestial navigation. And I thought, that's interesting. So I took that course from her, and she also and finished that course. But then she had a sailing course, and she was teaching sailing lessons. But it was like $150 for quite a few two-hour lessons, and it was very cheap. And so I just jumped on board.
And when was that? What year did you do the celestial navigation?
I think that was around 79, 80. That's when I first met her.
Tell me about Nancy. What was it like when you met her? What did you think of her when you first met her?
I liked her right off because she was direct. She was up. She had a openness to her. That was fresh. It was not coy. But she was just very open and direct, and easy to talk to. And she had a strength about her that I liked. She was strong, and I like to see that in women. I like independent women. Because it shows character.
And so after you took the sailing course from her, you started. Then what? You tell me what happened.
Well, we got along and became friends, and she asked me to start crewing for her. She was working for the Oceanic Society and doing charters. Along with Steve Kornberg. But she just asked me to come along and crew.
What's the Oceanic Society?
I couldn't tell you too much about it. I didn't know too much about it. It's just a group, I guess, of people that are interested in ocean-related activities. And it also offered exposure in different ways involving ocean activities, especially sailing.
And so where did you go on these charters?
Well, the first one of the first charters I did with her was to Manelli Bay on Lanai, and it was across the channel. And I thought it was just great. Actually, that wasn't the first. That was the second. The first one, she wanted me to help her deliver a boat to Kauai, to Niwiliwili Harbor, which was all across the state. So she had another crew, Daniel, who got the boat ready, and they were pretty exhausted getting ready for this charter. They were going to pick up a family in Kauai and take them out to watch, I think, some solar eclipse or some celestial observation, that they was going to be about 300 miles, I think, north of Kauai that they wanted to do. And so they were preparing the boat to get there. And
I just want you to move your hands because I don't want it to interfere with your speaking, that's all.
All right.
I'll hear this, that's all.
Okay.
So anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, that's all right. And so she asked me for some help to crew. And I said, great. I love going out on boats. I love being on the ocean. And I'd never been across on the ocean in Hawaii. So I hopped on board, and it was great. We left at night. We crossed the Alanui Haha. It was wild. It was stormy. It was squally. There was rain. There was wind. I felt like I was in a washing machine.
Were you scared?
No, it was exciting. And Nancy instills a lot of confidence. She had a lot of experience. And she was so happy doing what she was doing, that it was just enjoyable being there with her.
And so we
sailed all the way to the Willy Willy. It took us about 48 hours, and it was a lovely trip. It was just it was squally, it was windy, it was calm, but you got to see all the islands and the lights of the islands. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So, describe the sail. I mean, not everybody would know that going from Kona to Kauai means you go up the whole Hawaiian Island.
You go past all the inhabited islands except Niihau. You start in Kona, and you head across. The first channel is Alanui Haha, which is between the Big Island and Maui. And then there's also below Maui is Ka'olawe, which was uninhabited. And also at that time, it was being used as a bombing range, as a bombing target. And at times later, before they stopped the bombing, they would be bombing at night while you'd be sailing by, and you'd see these explosions. But we sailed by Ka'olawe in Maui, and then the next island would be Lanai, and then you go across, I forget the name of the channel, it's between Lanai and Molokai, but then you leave, you go under Molokai, we sailed under Molokai, and then you go across the Kaiwi Channel, which is the Molokai Channel between Molokai and Oahu. And you sail under Oahu, and then you sail 60 miles between across the Kauai Channel to Kauai. And it just gives you all this beautiful scenery to look at. And it gives you quite a variety of winds and changes of weather, and it was just a lot of fun.
What a great introduction to sailing.
It was being dropped into one of the nicest sails. It was my first inner island, and I've loved it ever since. And I've made more sails to Kauai. I've made two sails to Kauai, to Hanalei Bay, to Niihau, and then back Port Allen, and then back to the Big Island, and many. Sails around Molokai, and many sails to the other islands. It must have been over 100 sails in her island. It just, but it was. It was like I didn't start out with baby steps. I started out with one big step right across the state.
Amazing. To me, it's always sounded like Hawaii has sounded like one of the most challenging places to sail. I mean, because of the channels. I mean, because where there's no channels, it's the big wide Pacific Ocean. I mean, has it seemed that way to you? Out of all the places that you've sailed, is it particularly challenging?
Well, if anything happens, yes, you're out in the middle of the ocean. We rarely, if ever, see another boat. We do run across, we do see the tug and barges that deliver goods between the islands. And sometimes we talk to them if we're close. But we rarely see any other boats. So if anything happened, if things broke or we had problems, you're in the middle of the ocean. And a lot of people think it's just a little gunk holing, like they say, like they do in the Caribbean, where you go from a little port to a little harbor to a little place, and it's just a little short sail, and you just take a sandwich and a beer, and that's it. You have to provision the boat. You have to have plenty of water, because if anything happens, you might be out there a week before someone can recognize that you're gone or find you.
I wanted to backtrack and ask you, in the courses that you took, both the navigation courses and the sailing courses that you took with Nancy, mm-hmm. were there things that she taught that you think were unique that you might not have learned from someone else? What did you learn? I mean, you don't have to tell me everything, but I just want to get a sense of how you learned what you learned from her.
I think mostly what I learned about from Nancy is her attitude towards sailing, and how enjoyable that challenge can be. Celestial navigation is something that gives you it gives you a tool so that you can go out there and cross an ocean and find an island, and do it on your own, unconnected with the rest of the world. But basically, it's Nancy's attitude, or her enthusiasm, and her connections with the local people made sailing in Hawaii so much nicer than just learning how to cross a channel or cross an ocean with somebody else.
Is there a particular anecdote about Nancy that comes to mind that makes you think, oh yeah, that's Nancy? Any experiences that you had together? It just seems like you've told me so many stories about this time when I was out with Nancy that's happened, and I just wondered if any of those stories came to mind right now.
I wish, there's plenty of stories, and I wish I could come up with something now. I was telling Carlos about a trip that we had. We had a charter later on, after knowing Nancy for a while. We went in together on a 50-foot steel boat, an old boat that was built by the German Navy in 1928, and we took her. We used her commercially for different and various charters. One was for the University of Cambridge. And this was to take scientists from Tahiti out to Henderson Island, which is about 1,400 miles to the east of Tahiti. And so I delivered the boat to Tahiti, and Nancy was to meet the boat down there, and do the first leg out to Pitcairn Island and back. But Nancy, this is an old boat, and this boat leaks, and it's not cushy and comfortable and deluxe. It didn't have refrigeration, and it didn't have any of the comforts of modern yachts. But just sailing with her always made it fun, and everybody that sailed on it always seemed to come through it with good stories, with good feelings about it. Whereas I think if without Nancy's force of will, without her personality, without her enthusiasm, I think a lot of people would sail, be sailing on something as basic as the Goodwind, and come away with not the same feelings.
How long did you crew for Nancy?
Well, I crewed with her for till about 83, when we got Goodwind.
And then you owned a boat together.
And then that's when we bought Goodwind and owned it together. When we first, after we got Goodwind, and I was pretty innocent and ignorant of rules and regulations and about the Jones Act, which governed commercial activity for yachts. And Goodwind was a foreign-built vessel, and foreign-built vessels and foreign-owned vessels were prohibited from doing commercial work in the United States, except for there were three exceptions. One was oceanographic research or voyages to nowhere, which is you go out past the three-mile limit and come back to the same port, and or you do foreign voyages where you go from a U.S. port to a foreign port to a U.S. port. So the first thing we decided to do, or Nancy suggested that we do, was we'd go to a foreign port. So we looked on the chart, found the closest foreign island, and then advertised, and we went there.
And what was the port?
It was Fanning Island.
And how far was it from Hawaii?
It was about 1,000 miles south of Hawaii.
Had you ever been there before?
No. Neither had Nancy. But Nancy knew a lady, Annie Vitusik, who had been stationed there during the war, and Annie was a sailor, and Annie had agreed to go with us to introduce us to Fanning Island.
Why did she? She'd been there during the war, but she was American.
No, she was British.
Oh, I see.
And Fanning Island is a British cable station, and various. Places were protected, or had people stationed on them during the war, and she was there. So that's where we went. But first, we had to go to Christmas Island to check in with the government, because Fanning is a part of the island nation of Kiribati, and Kiribati became a nation in 1978. And before, it was a coconut plantation owned by a British firm. But now it was a possession of Kiribati, so Christmas Island, about 150 miles away, was a port of entry. So we went to Christmas Island first, and the government talked to us and asked us if we would pick up their parliamentary ministers from Fanning and Washington Island, which, because they hadn't been to Parliament in 2 years.
Because there was no boat.
Because there was no access to boat. They were lucky to see one of the government boats from Tarawa once a year. And there wasn't always room to take these people, and rarely did they go to Washington Island. Those people were pretty isolated. There was no anchorage. It's a round island with no harbor, no place for a boat to stop. They would have to just stand off and get longboats, and they weren't always ready to do that.
Does that mean that they were basically, they must have been just as an aside, they must have been pretty much self-sustaining, is that right?
They were, yes. They were totally self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And They had wonderful foods, you know. They would grow some taro, they would grow some papaya, they had and fish and lots of coconuts, and they did the best they could.
Did interesting. That must have been, was that the first time you'd ever seen something like that, a place like that?
Yes.
Was it like? What did it feel like to be there?
It was, it was rather beautiful. It was such a beautiful island, and the people were so kind, and we were happy to be there, and they were happy to see us. When we left Christmas Island to go to Washington Island first to pick up the Te Taki, the first parliamentary minister, we got to the island standing off, and the official comes out in a small launch, a little outboard, comes up to the boat wearing a pareu and his official coat and hat, welcomes us to the island, and says they are happy that we're there, that they welcome us to Washington, but he needs gas to get back in to his island. They're so short of supplies. But after we gave him fuel, and he went and he started to bring out Te Taki. Te Taki had his wife and his son. And then there was the we ended up taking 11 people and their goods, their metal suitcases and their stocks of bananas and their food and they just all piled on the boat. And we had not the heart to say no. And so it was so enjoyable being involved in this experience, and to be useful, to be helpful, to be to these people. And they were so kind to us. And the same thing happened. We took a couple of them, got off on Fanning Island when we reached there. And these are not easy trips, because going from Washington to Fanning back to Christmas is to weather and against a current. So you have to make long tacks and be fairly accurate. And at that time, we were only using a sextant. So we had to take readings every morning and every evening if we could. Although that first trip was so squally, we had squalls all the time. We had cloudy skies, lots of rain, and it was a very wet trip.
How did you do your navigation?
Well, we just did it when we could, when we could get sights. You could do sun sights at noontime to get a fairly accurate position for latitude and longitude, but you had to be exact, and you did it out of a nautical almanac. And and when we could, we would take star sights at dawn and at dusk, where you had a 20-minute window to take these readings, take these sights, and then you do your calculations and hopefully come up with fairly good lines of position. With star sights, you want to take at least 3 or 4 or 5, and then they intersect, and hopefully you get a small triangle that tells you about where you are.
And I guess it worked.
Well, Nancy had sailed around the world 3 times and lived to tell about it. so she was a good navigator. And, of course, she taught me, and I had fun doing my sights too, and so it was not hard. People had been doing it for a few hundred years.
How far was it from it was Washington to Fanning to Christmas? That the order?
That's right.
And how far was it between the islands?
Not too far. There was only about 150 miles between Christmas and Fanning, and maybe another 120 miles between Fanning and Washington. So sailing from Christmas Island to Fanning is only about a 24-hour trip. But sailing from Fanning back to Christmas is a 3-day trip, because you have to make long tacks, and it's just, you're just going dead against the weather. The only way to do it is in a very powerful boat, but still you're beating into the waves, into the wind, into the current. And even then it's not an easy trip going to weather.
Just from the short amount of time I've had to get to know you, I'm just so impressed by what seems like a huge passion for many things, but particularly for sailing. Am I close to the mark on that?
Well, sailing maybe in particular, but in general, just the ocean. I just love it. I remember I used to go fishing a lot. I used to go on albacore boats when I was a kid, and my dad had a good friend, and that's all he did. He just went out after albacore and marlin, and he would do it commercially. He would go out, and we would go out miles and miles and miles. We would go out for days, and we'd go out and catch quite a lot of albacore, and we'd bring it in and turn it into the cannery. And but I happened to be on one trip down in the Sea of Cortez when I was 14. And I remember waking up one morning, and there was a cook, and he was cooking Spanish omelets. And I was lying in my bunk, and I realized, this is what I'd like to do for the rest of my life. I just love it. I just love being here. I love doing this. I just love the whole thing. And I just, it's never, that enthusiasm, that love has never changed.
Why do you love, what is it? What do you love about it?
There's a freedom, there's a freshness, there's a cleanness to it. It's constantly changing, it's constantly challenging, it's constantly different. It's always something new, and yet it's familiar.
How does it feel when you are on land for a long while? Do you miss it?
I can, as I get older now, I can be happy playing by the seashore. But I still love getting out there. I still love being on the ocean. It's so comfortable. I love walking around on a tossing boat. It's like an acrobat, you know. He just loves walking the wire, you know. And there's some balance to it too. There's some connection. There's some cosmic connection that makes you feel like you're all of a sudden plugged in harmoniously with the rest of the universe that you just don't get, for me, in other places.
What do you think it is that makes that feeling?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to describe feelings, you know? Feelings come from the heart. It's a visceral interaction. It's not intellectual. I mean, you can make it intellectual. You can try and describe it. You can try and theorize about it. When it comes right down to it, it's a gut feeling that just brings you home. And it makes me happy. Well, I feel lucky. I feel lucky that I have a connection to something that's brought me through all kinds of trials and tribulations, all kinds of pain and disappointment. And there's something always consistently steady and comforting about the ocean. And whether it's because we're also so much filled with water ourselves, or what? It's just soothing. It's like it's maybe it's like being in the womb. You know, back where it's safe, back where it's comfortable.
I could see that. It's interesting. Because for so many people it's so terrifying. It's so unusual for someone to feel that safe. It's as if they're in the womb.
I think in a world that has so much pain, and there's so many people hurting, that it's a shame that people cannot connect to their environment, that people cannot connect to something that they just love, that isn't just one thing or a person. It's an all-encompassing feeling, where they can always go back to and center themselves. And you wish that more people would be able to find some enthusiasm, some joy in where they're at or what they're doing or what they can believe in, what they can hold on to. And everybody needs something, and everybody has something, but not everybody connects with it. And I think I know that some of these realizations that I have about the sea and the ocean and sailing and have taken years and years and years of different.
He's asking you if you go ahead and put your hand down. That's a good thing about not being on the air.
It's time.
It's changing the way.
Oh my! Yeah. Oh, I got gotcha. You. I got gotcha. You.
Anyway, you're in the middle of this very poetic moment. I'm so
sorry
to interrupt you.
If I can remember.
You were saying. Oh wait, no. Let's see if we can reconstruct that sentence. It takes years and years.
Ah, yes, yes. To realize what you have, what is there, what is how fortunate it is to just to have a place that you can go back to. I don't know, for some reason, I think I always realized that it's like I said, when I was 14, I realized this is where I love to be, and I always have gone back there. And I don't know whether everybody has always found a safe place where they can return to and re-examined their life. And maybe help to eliminate, the problems and the pain that they've encountered. Because we get hooked on so many things. It's the one thing I could probably never give up is the ocean, is being near the sea. And it's not, and I realize it's not food, it's not drugs, it's not material things. It's just it's that feeling. And it's, you wish that everyone could find a safe place.
Well, thanks, Terry. I really appreciate that. It's really, it is very inspiring.
Yeah, it's almost brought me to tears.
Yeah. inspiration for other people too.
No.
You're allowed to cry if you want.
You know, I've been inspired by so many people you know, I'm grateful. Like Nancy. Nancy is, she inspires so many people to go out there. You know, don't be afraid. Jump right into it. Take a chance. And you know, that's the best advice, you know, anybody can have.
That's true. Sounds like she definitely inspired you. Sounds like she changed your life.
Well, among others, but yeah, she was a big part of getting out there and sailing. That's for sure. That's for sure.
Just quickly backtrack on a factoid moment. How old were you when you took this course from Nancy?
I was 29.
Uh-huh. And how old are you now?
I'm 55.
So you and Nancy have known each other for 26 years?
Yeah.
It's a good long friendship.
Yeah, it's been steady.
Is there anything else?
No, I'm speechless.